And we're holding on page Tesvav in Gittin Os Memdalin. The Mishnah had talked about a case of a person who was attacked by Kud Yokus, which we said is caused by a person drinking too much new wine. So either it means freshly produced wine, which hasn't fermented and gotten alcoholic yet. So in that case, it would basically be a sugar high, or it means maybe that it is alcoholic enough that now he's gotten alcohol poisoning. Anyway, the Mishnah mentions it in connection with the point that then if in a situation like that, he says, write a get for my wife, then we can't do that because he's not in his right mind. But the Gemara had mentioned that Kurdiokos is actually the name of a shed that attacks a person who does that. And so now that leads the Gemara now into a discussion about shading. The Pasuk says about Shlomo HaMelech says on himself in Kehelas, Osisi li shorim v'shorois, he says, I made for myself male and female singers, v'sanugas v'nei ha'adam, and the enjoyments of people, shida v'shidois. I made for myself shida and shidois. So in context, So it's talking about the various things that that Shlomo made for himself, where now he has it all, he has all the riches and all the wealth and everything, and now he's using that to investigate what is a person's purpose in life, does a person gain the maximum enjoyment from having that kind of thing, or is there something higher in life? Bottom of page, test of Alvin Gideon. Shorim b'shorim, so when we say male and female singers, elam is zemer. So this refers to different types of musical instruments. So shorim would be, so Marsha points out, you know, you have certain kinds of instruments that more often men play, and others that women more often play. Eighth Yosef makes another point as well. He brings the Medrash on Kehelas, from Kehelas Rabbah, that actually says we are talking about male and female singers, so not different kinds of instruments, but rather different kinds of singers. What about Kol Isha Erva? So he says there are a few possibilities. One of them could be that you have ones who are entertaining him, and then you have male singers who are entertaining Shlomo, and then female singers who are entertaining his wives. Another possibility, he says, is maybe the male and female we mean over here are male singers would be adult men who have deep voices, and the females would be not females, but rather boys who have high-pitched voices like women. Yeah, so the Eitz Yosef says that, yeah, Shlomo was the one who invented the science of music. It doesn't mean necessarily invented. He had the Levium singing in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash before him. But in other words, like, he came up with many new ideas, many new innovations in that field. So, yeah, Eitz Yosef is saying that one of them may have been the concept of vocal harmonies, of having adult male singers and boy singers. So that you have... Yuval was the first one who invented musical instruments, but we're talking about that Shlomo is saying over here came up with major advances in that. So that's as far as that's Shorim B'Shoris. The Sanugas B'nei Adam, when he continues the delights, the enjoyments of people, that refers to pools and bathhouses, so cold pools to bathe in the summertime and hot bathhouses for the wintertime. Besides, this is the most straightforward meaning that means just that, you know, back then to be able to have water to bathe in itself was a bit of a luxury, especially hot water. But on top of that, also Ben Yehoyada says it may have been mineral water, medicinal type waters or whatever. So therefore, even more so. Now, what are shida b'shidos? Hocha targimu, here in Bava, they explain, it means shida b'shidsin. That it means male and female shading. Male and female shading, as we'll tell the story soon. The Ma'arava Amri shidsa, in the West, in the Eretz Yisrael, they said that it means carriages or coaches, in particular for women and noblemen ride around in those. For shida and shidos would be various kinds of coaches and things like that. Ben Yehoyada says that actually it may not have just if it's just some coaches, there's no great chiddush in that. He says it may be, just like we said, that Shlomo invented advances in music. Maybe he also invented advances in transportation as well. And his shida and shidos are not just ordinary coaches, but rather motor cars or trains or something like that, things that are able to move on their own using steam power or something like that. So horns are Shida and Shidos would be various kinds, the kind that men ride in and the kind that women ride in.
There's some mentioning about him having some flowing...
So it does talk about that he had a flying carpet or something like that. Yeah, maybe you're thinking of that, yeah. Okay. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So in this connection, Rabbi Yochanan says, speaking as far as Shadim, there's a place called Shichin where there are 300 types of Shadim, the Shida Asma, any Adamahi, and yet I don't really know what the Shida itself is. So Rashi has two explanations. One is that it means, so I can see there are 300 different kinds of Shadim over there, but to know the essential nature of what a Shed is, says Rabbi Yochanan, I don't know. The second explanation, Rashi says, is that I know that they have a head, I know they have a queen over all of them, a mother queen, like a queen of all of those, Lilith or something, but I don't really know what it is. Then there's a third explanation also that some Mephoshim say, that means that he's saying there's a kind of Shed that can transform itself into 300 different types or 300 different colors or things like that. We find elsewhere, the Gemara mentions that Shedim can turn into shapeshifters and they can turn into different shapes and colors. So I don't know what the essential Shed is. All I can see is the various ways in which it appears and transforms itself into. Okay. So, Omamar, so we said, Hocha Tagimu, that here in Babel they explain that Shida Vashidot means Shida Vashidsin, means male and female Shadim. So, Shida Vashidsin, Lamayi Boile. What does Shloima need a male and female Shadim for? In fact, Marsha points out, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, it was in Dafayomi about a week and a half ago, that you're not supposed to use Shadim. It's dangerous to start asking them for things because then they can harm a person. The Gemara mentions certain exceptions over there, but basically, so what does Shlomo need Shadim for? What's he going to use him for? And the answer is, Dichtiv, like this. The Pasuk says, V'abayis b'hibon noise, the Beis Mikdash, when it was being built, Evan Shlomo Masa Nivne v'goymer, it was built out of whole stones that were brought there. So they quarried stones from the quarry and they brought them and built the Beis Mikdash out of them. The point being, in other words, that they didn't use iron tools on them. Now, in the Torah, it mentions only that the Mizbeach can't be built with stones that had iron tools used on them. But here, Shlomo used that for the Beis Mikdash in general. We'll learn actually in a few months from now, Bez Hashem, at the end of Soita. It talks about that there are different opinions about that. Actually, when it says that they were whole stones, not quarry with iron tools, is that referring to the Heichal as a whole, or is it referring to the Mizbeach specifically? In any case, the point is that here, at least for the Mizbeach, and maybe for the Beis Mikdash as a whole, he needed whole stones without using iron tools to cut them. So, Amalehu l'Rabbanan, Heichi Eved. So he asks the Chachamim, what should I do? How do I prepare these stones and have them be the shapes that I want without iron tools? Omar, or Omrile, so they told him, Ika Shamira, there was the Shamir worm, the icy Moshe l'Avne Eifed, which Moshe, back in the day, used for engraving the stones of the ephod. Now, the stones of the ephod and also the choshen had the names of the shvatim on them, and they had to be, on the one hand, they had to be pituchei chosam, as the pasuk says, they had to be engraved like you would on a signet. On the other hand, you couldn't use iron tools on them because the pasuk said demilu osam, you had to have that the complete stone was there, not that some of it was chiseled away to form the letters. So the way they did was, then Rashi describes, based on the Gemara over there, they would write the letters on the stones using ink, then they would take the shamir worm and put it on those places where the ink was, and it would split. And therefore you'd have, so now the letters are engraved on the stones, but not in a way where they're, where there's anything missing of the stone. The Gemara compares it to like the way, for example, sometimes you see in dry weather, the ground will crack open, and nothing of it is actually missing. In the same way, for example, if you have dried fruit, for example, will sometimes crack open, and nothing of it is missing. So they told him that's what Moshe did. So now you should use the same kind of thing for the stones of the Beis Mikdash. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here about whether in fact Whether and what about in the did they have this in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash? The Gemara in Sota where they mentions that the Shomer disappeared around the time of Churban Bayis Rishon. They didn't have it in Bayis Sheni, and yet it seems that from the Bayis Sheni they did have they had a Choshen, they had stones over there, and you have the whole story of Dama ben Nesina, which Tosfos points out evidently happened during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. So Tosfos says evidently that no, even though the Gemara is saying over there that the Shomer disappeared, it means, in other words, that no, it means other things that it mentions over there disappeared after Churban Bayis Rishon, but meanwhile you have the Shomer still existed, and they still had it until the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. So therefore they were able to use it to carve the stones. Then Tosfos goes on, there's a part of Tosfos that's not here in Ein Yaakov, which is printed in the Gemara, and discusses the point that one thing that Tosfos establishes is the Shomer could cut through stone, but it wouldn't make the stone smooth. They would still have rough edges, which is why the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, it's also brought in Mishnayos Midos, that you had the stones of the Mizbeach, which the Yevonim desecrated. They used the Mizbeach to bring korbanos to Getchkes and whatever, and when the Chashmonaim recaptured the Beis Hamikdash, they couldn't recut those stones and reuse them. They had to get whole new stones. Now, why couldn't they use the Shomer? Tosfos says, even if they had the Shomer, because it would produce jagged cuts, not perfectly smooth ones, and the stones of the Mizbeach have to be perfectly smooth. So Tosfos is saying that they did in fact have the Shomer in the second Beis Hamikdash as well, and that would explain how they were able to cut the stones for the Ephod and the Choshen and put the names on them in the second Beis Hamikdash. Not everyone agrees with that, and there are in fact Mephoshim who say that maybe in the second Beis Hamikdash they had no choice. They had to cut them with iron tools, or maybe even they didn't have the names on them after all. In the second Beis Hamikdash, we know that the Choshen didn't work with the Urim V'Tumim to give messages from Hashem, so maybe therefore it didn't have the same dinim. Anyway, the point is, so the Chachamim are telling Shloimeh that you need the Shomer for this purpose. Amalahu, so he tells them, Heichi Ishtakach, where can I find this Shomer? Amri Lai, so the Chacham told him, I see Shidah v'Shidsin, bring a male and a female shed, Kavshinu Ahadodi, press them together, Rashi says, Loshin Mach v'Shabagodim, like a clothes press, like put pressure on them, Efshir Diyadi, and that way maybe they'll know, Maglu Lacha, and then they'll reveal to you the secret. One thing is, a couple of them are first to make the point over here. The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos about you have the things that were created Erev Shabbos, Ben HaShemoshes, and among them are the Shomer, it lists over there, and Yeshayim and Maf Mazikin. So the Mazikin are Shadim. So therefore the Shadim were created at the same time as the Shomer, and therefore they have a certain affinity to it, and therefore they might know. There's also a long, fascinating explanation from Rabbi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, that goes through various parts of our Gemara over here and explains them. B'Pnimiyus Inyanim, he makes the point in some detail that the Shomer represents a great power of Gvura, which is how it's able to cut through stones like this, and the Shadim also represent the power of Gvura, and therefore there's a certain affinity between them, and therefore if you get them together, then they'll know the secret. He also makes the point, by the way, an interesting point. We have over here Shida the Shidsin. Shida would mean a male shed. Shidsin is actually a plural, means two female Shidas. So why one male and two females? He says, I'll derech like you have in Kedusha, you have Yaakov, and then you have his two wives, Rachel and Leah. The same way in Klippa, you have one male and two females. So I see Shida v'Shidsin. So sure enough, Shloimeh brings a shed and female Shadis, Kavshinu Hadodi, and he pressed them one against the other to try to force them to reveal the secret. B'chol, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Shloimeh ruled over there's an expression in the pasuk Vayeshiv Shloimeh al Kisei Hashem, that he sat on the throne of Hashem, and that means just as Hashem rules over both the world down here and the worlds up there, the same way Shloimeh had a rulership over all the different worlds, including the Ruchniyistic worlds, which is how he's able to have Shadim do whatever he wants. Amri, so they said, Anan lo yadinan, we ourselves don't know where the Shomer is. Duma Ashmedai Malka the Shidi Yoda, but maybe Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim, knows. So he's called Ashmedai Meloshin, Meloshin Hashmoda, destruction, because that's what Shadim are, destructive creatures. There's the idea that Ben Yoyada points out the beginning of the name Ashmedai is Eish, which means fire. Rav Levi Yitzchok adds that, it was mentioned that point also, and also adds a point that you, that also adds the point that the letters of it can be rearranged to spell Ima and Shin Dalad Yud, so therefore it represents the Gvuris that are within Bina, and he goes into an Arichos of what Ashmedai represents within, within Kochus, within Kochus of Klippa. Anyway, so Ashmedai, Ben Yehoyada also points out, you know, the same way as all the kings of Egypt are called Paro, the same way in every generation, the king of the Shadim of that time has the title Ashmedai. B'chol, the Gemara tells us in Chagiga that Shadim are in three ways like people, and in three ways like Malachim, and one of the ways in which they're like people is they live and die, they're born and die, so therefore, so eventually, the old Ashmedai dies, and a new one takes over, and he gets the title Ashmedai.
We learned that some months ago,
yeah, when we got to Chagiga, yeah. Okay. Amalahu Hechi, see? So he asks these Shadim, where is Ashmedai? Amilai, they answered him, Isay the Turaplan. He lives on a certain mountain. Kariyale Beira, he has over there, he dug himself a pit there, Omayale Maya, and he filled up that pit with water. Omichasya Batinra, and he covered that pit with a stone, and he seals that stone with his seal, with his signet, so that way he can tell if anybody tampered with it. Now every day Ashmedai goes up to Shamayim, because after all, as the Gemara says over there, Malachim, Shadim are half like people, half like Malachim, so in token of the fact that he's similar to a Malach, he goes up to Shamayim, he learns from what they're learning in the Yeshiva Shalmaila over there, the Nochis La'ara, then he comes back down to earth, the Gomer Masivta Da'ara, and he learns the Torah that's being learned on earth, he goes and examines his seal to make sure that it's untouched, or Megalilei, and then he uncovers the pit, the Shossi, and he drinks, or Mechasilei, and then he covers up the pit, the Chosimlei, and he seals it up for Ozil, and he goes and does whatever he's going to do for the rest of the day. The Maharal gives a long explanation over here on this and on the whole following story in the Gemara. He says that all of this is meant metaphorically. The Shadim, after all, don't eat, don't drink water like people do, and so on and so on and so forth. So he explains essentially what the Gemara wants to tell us over here is Shadim, again, they're half like people, half like Malachim, and therefore one way in which they're different than people, people are composite creatures. A person is made up of the four Yesodis, and a person has the ten Sphiris within him and so forth, whereas a Shed, like a Malach, is more of a unitary creature. So in token of that, therefore, so he has, on the one hand, he's not completely unitary, that's why he has parts of Shemayim and Oretz in him represented, that he goes up to Shemayim and learns there, and he comes back down to earth and learns. But for example, therefore, it's represented metaphorically that his drink is water, which unlike wine is not a composite, it's one yesoid. So that represents the point, in other words, that he has a nature very unlike people, and that therefore his drink is water, and then when we say he has a seal, means that every Nivra has his own unique way, he has a unique way of learning and absorbing of course and absorbing energy from energy that Hashem gives into the world different than anybody else, represented by his personal signet, and he goes on Barichos and discusses different angles on that. By the way, as far as this that we're saying that Shlomo had to ask the Shadim, and now he's going to ask Ashmedai, Tosfos points out, why don't you just ask the Urim B'Tumim? Why don't you just ask, yeah. So Tosfos says, because he didn't want to, if they could use something else, if they could find another method to get this information, then he didn't want to use the Urim B'Tumim for that purpose. Another point as well is that the Urim V'Tumim is primarily meant for when you go into war, for example. You ask the Urim V'Tumim whether you're going to be successful. It's not meant to, the same way as, for example, you don't ask the Urim V'Tumim to paskin halacha, the same way you don't use it for information like this. So therefore, you have to find it in other ways. Okay. So now that Shlomo knows where Ashmedai is and what his habits are, so now he's prepared to go and capture him and put him under his authority, which represents, again, the Maharal is going to explain this whole story, basically means the following story is going to be that he has to change certain fundamental things about Ashmedai's nature in order to make him more of a composite-like creature, where then Shlomo, himself being a human being, will now be able to have control over him. So the Gemara says, Shadri Leila Bnei Yehu Ben Yehoyada. So Shlomo sent Bnei Yehu Ben Yehoyada to do the job. Marashah points out the name Bnei Yehu actually represents, is related to the word Binyan. So it's related to the word Binyan. So because through him, the Beis Hamikdash is going to be enabled to be built once they have the Shomer. He also adds, like this, you have Bnei Yehu and Yehoyada. So his name ends with three letters of Hashem's name. His father's name begins with three letters of Hashem's name. So that represents that now he has the power of two names of Hashem, which now Shlomo is going to give him two more things that have Hashem's name. So therefore he's being fortified now with multiple mentions of Hashem's name, with which he's going to use to defeat Ashmedai. So Yoav Leshushilta, Shlomo gave him a chain, the Chokach Alosh Shem, which had a name of Hashem engraved on it, the Izkasa, and also a wing, the Chokach Alosh Shem, that has a name of Hashem engraved on it. So one thing is, it comes out therefore, in effect, he has now four names of Hashem with him now, representing that now he'll be able to go to overcome the four Yisrael, that now he'll be able to transform Ashmedai in four different ways and make him a creature of the four Yisrael, just like a human being, and be able to get him. In addition, Shlomo provided Bnei Yehu Ben Yehoyada Gvovi de Amra. He gave him bundles of wool. Viziki de Chamra and wine skins and skin bags full of wine. So these are going to be the things with which he's going to defeat Ashmedai. Also, Kora Beira Mitatoi. So Bnei Yehu goes to this mountain. He digs a pit further down slope. So like this, you have in the middle of the mountain over there. At some point, is Ashmedai's pit with the water. Now the point is, as the Gemara is going to say, he wants to replace the water with wine, but he can't just do it directly by opening up by taking off the rock, because then the seal will be broken, and then Ashmedai will realize something's wrong, and he won't drink from it. So therefore, what he does is he goes and digs a pit further down slope from the water pit. The Shafinu Lamaya, then he digs a hole between the new pit and the old one, and now he drains all the water from the original pit into the new pit. The Sasmina Begrovi Damra, then he stuffs the hole with all the hanks of wool. So now he can put something else into the upper pit, into what was the original pit, which has now been drained of its water, and now he'll be able to fill it with wine, and it won't leak out because the hole is now stuffed closed with the wool. The Kora Beirah Me'iloi, then he dug another pit uphill of the original pit. The Shafchinu L'chamra, he pours the wine into that new pit. The Taminu, and he closed up and he closed up both of those pits. So now what happens is, so now you have a pit into which he put the wine, and a hole going down from it into Ashmedai's original pit, still covered with the rock. So now the wine goes down into there. Meanwhile, the water that was in there has been drained out of there into yet another pit downhill, and therefore the seal is unbroken, but the water has been replaced with wine. Solik Yosef Ilana, and then Bnei Yehu goes and hides in it and then climbs up a tree to watch what's going to happen. Ki Osa, when Ashmedai comes from the Masiv to Dirakia, Sire the Goshpanka, he checked his seal, found it was still intact. Galye, he takes off the rock and opens up the pit. Ashkechei Chamra, and he found that the pit is now full of wine. Omar, he says to himself, wait a minute, should I be drinking this wine? The pasuk says, "Leitz Hayayin Hoymer." This is actually a pasuk from Mishlei, which Shlomo himself had written. Leitz Hayayin, wine is a less, it causes a person to mock and to not take things in Yiddishkeit seriously. Hoymer Shecher, strong alcoholic drinks cause a person to be noisy. Boy, anybody who's foolish and addicted to it, lo yachkam is not going to be wise. Uchtiv, and you have another pasuk, znus v'yayin v'sirish, yikach lev. Znus and wine and tirish, which is also wine, yikach lev, take away a person's heart. Tosfos points out, Mela, the first pasuk is from Mishlei, so fine, Shlomo may have already written that pasuk by that time. The second pasuk that he's quoting, Znus v'yayin v'tirish yikach lev, is actually from the Navi Hoshea, who lived a couple hundred years later. How is Ashmedai quoting it now? Tosfos says, and this is a basic concept that we have in other, that comes up in other places in Shas as well, even before the Pasuk was written, the concept was already known. So therefore, and then Tosfos gives another example of it from Baba Basra, so that therefore Ashmedai could know of the concept expressed in that Pasuk, and even with those words, even before it was given to the Navi. First of all, we have the concept like a midi delayed mizi barai. So there's nothing even in Nach that's not hinted at in the five chumashim. So then the five chumashim had already been given by that point. And besides that, also it's actually brought there are places that it says that all the words of the neviim and ksuvim were also dictated word by word by Hashem to Moshe. Just as Hashem told them that they're not, it's not going to be written down. It's going to be written down in later generations by the neviim. Anyway, the point is that Ashmedai is thinking to himself that I shouldn't be drinking this wine. Now, Marsha points out, you know, you never really find that the Shadim in general should be careful of such a thing. But again, the King Ashmedai being a Chacham, as we said before, he learns in the Masivta de Rakia and he learns in the Masivta de Ara, so he's not just an ordinary Shed, he's something higher than that. So he's realizing that wine can confuse a person, or a Shed for that matter, and therefore he doesn't want to drink from it. Marsha also adds the point, he's not concerned that somebody else, now to begin with, why does he have a seal on it? But Pashtus, because he's concerned that somebody might tamper with it and put poison into it or something. Here, he finds the seal is unbroken, so he knows it's not like anybody got in there and poisoned it. How is it that it turned into wine? He says, I don't know, but the fact is, should I be drinking wine? Loy Ishti, so he didn't drink. Keith Sochi, but then he got thirsty. Lois Sagula, he couldn't stand it anymore. Ishti, and so he drank. On the side of here, Yad Yosef brings a Gyusa, which you also find on the side of the printed Gemara, that he thinks to himself, you know what, after all, Ksiv, the Pasuk says, V'yayini samach levav enish, wine makes a person's heart happy, so he's rationalizing to himself, you know what, fine, there is a good reason to drink wine after all. So Ishti, he drank it. Rava, he got drunk for Gunna, and he fell asleep. Which again, the Maharal explains, continuing in the vein of his explanation, that what this means is, in other words, that Benayahu is now able to transform him from a simple creature whose drink is water, representing that he has only one yisod in him, basically, that he's an uncompounded creature. Now he makes him more human, represented by wine, which has many different chemicals and molecules and whatnot, different types in it, and therefore now he makes him that now he's able to, now he's on a level closer to humans, and therefore that he, Benayahu, and Shlomo are going to be able to dominate him. So he put the chain around Ashmedai, Sasmani, and he closed the chain around his neck so he can't get out his head. Ki itar, when Ashmedai woke up, Havakam Mufarzal, he sees it's chained up. He's trying to break the chain. It was a tremendously powerful creature, as the Gemara is going to say soon. Omalei, but Benayahu tells him, Shmod Marach Aloch, the name of your master, Hashem, is on you. Don't try to break that chain, because now you are, now I've gotten you with the power of Hashem who is with me. Now, a couple of the Mephoshim deal with the question, so we see so far what Benayahu used the chain for, with Hashem's name on it. So far, we haven't really found what he used the ring for. We said that Shlomo also gave him a ring with Hashem's name. What's the point of that? So Marsha and a couple of the other Mephoshim say that the point of it is that even though Ashmedai is chained up, as we're going to have in the continuation of the story, he's still able to cause tremendous damage as he's going. So therefore, for Benayahu himself to be safe and not be harmed by Ashmedai, he needs to also be carrying with him and wearing a ring that has Hashem's name, and that way he'll be immune to anything that Ashmedai is going to try on him. So Ashmedai realizes he has no choice, he has to go along with it. He knocked Leva Osa as he was going along with Ashmedai, Motadikla, he came to a palm tree, Chafbe, and Ashmedai rubbed against that palm tree, Shadye, and he knocked it down. He was so tremendously powerful that just banging against or leaning against the palm tree was enough to knock it down. As later on, the Gemara is going to explain, there's a number of things that Benayahu, that Ashmedai does on this trip back to Yerushalayim, which Benayahu finds strange, and he asks him about it. He doesn't ask him about this, because Marashal points out further on, Benayahu understands, listen, Shadim are by nature dangerous, unpredictable creatures, so therefore, if he knocks down a palm tree, hardly surprising. He's exactly the type to do that kind of thing. Both of the Maharal mentions in his own way, Rav Levi Yitzchok mentions in his own way, the idea that the nature of a shed is to do this kind of thing, especially the Maharal makes the point that a shed is particularly irked by strong, tall things, so therefore he sees a strong, tall palm tree, he's going to try to knock it down. Similarly, Besa, they went by a house, Shadi, and he also knocked it down. But then they came by a hut that belonged to a widow. Nafkaihi, the widow comes out, she sees him coming, and she realizes that this is a destructive creature, and he might knock down her little cottage over there. Chananalei, and she pleaded with him not to destroy it. Kofal kemasa, so he listened to her, he accepted her pleas. So he bent himself, he turned suddenly in a different direction. Rashi uses the expression Uivik Seifa, yeah, like the width of his shoulders, which otherwise he would have banged into the house and knocked it down. Instead he turned away, Itzbabe Grama. And he turned away so quickly and so with such a jerk so suddenly that he broke a bone. Omar, he says, Hainu Dichtiv, this is like the Pasuk says, Veloshen Raka to Shaber Gorim, a soft tongue breaks a bone. Here, this woman's soft tongue, her pleas to spare her house, caused me to break a bone.
Wow.
Yeah. So it represents, in other words, again, that even a destructive creature like that, the Eidish just still runs the world, and then a poor woman like that makes a plea like that, then it still is enough to be able to overcome the power of such destructive forces. Rav Levi goes into a long discussion over here about what the shoulders signify in this connection. He connects it with the fact that it says that Shimshon took the gates of Aza and put them on his shoulders, so it represents certain koiches that he's being dissuaded from using them by her pleas, and he explains what that has to do with the Yudgum Midas Harachmin, the Chanun, related to over here, we're saying that Chonun Alei, and that therefore that has the ability to overcome those koichas of his. Next, Chozes Samya Dehavi Katoi Be'urcha, as they're continuing to go, Ashmedai sees a blind person who lost his way, he couldn't tell which way to go. And Ashmedai put this blind person on the right path. Now, why would he do that? He's a destructive creature. Why does he want to help this blind person? We'll learn later on that Benayahu later on asked Ashmedai what he was doing, why he did that. Chozer Ravya de Katoi Barucha. Then they continued going on. He saw a drunk person who was also lost on the way. Askeloche, and also Ashmedai helped set him on the right road. Then, as they were continuing on, they saw a wedding where they were having a lot of simcha. Bocha, and Ashmedai was crying at that. Now, what does that mean? You might think it's because he's a destructive creature. He doesn't want to see people being with simcha, but we'll learn later on that there was a different reason for his crying. Then they continued going on. Shamilahu gavra dahava ka'omile la'ushkafa. He overhears a person telling a shoemaker, Ovid le mesoni l'shev shni, make for me shoes that will last for 7 years. Achich, and when Ashmedai hears that, he laughs. Why do you laugh? Again, that's another thing that he'll explain to Ashmedai, that he'll explain to Benayahu later on. Chozahu kosma dahava kosim. He sees a magician doing his magic over there. And also, Achich, he laughed also for reasons that we'll explain later on. So, they finally make it to Yerushalayim. Ki mota lahosam, when they came to Yerushalayim, loy ayilu l'gabei d'shloima ad tlosa yomi. It was 3 days before they admitted him into Shloima's presence. The Maharal makes a point that even after all of this, even after Benayahu has subjugated Ashmedai and made him and taken away his pshitos and made him more of a complicated creature, nevertheless he's still on a whole different level than a person, and then Shloima Melech a person, and therefore you need a three day period, three representing a certain kind of completeness, that therefore you need 3 days before he's ready to before he and Shloima are ready to confront one another. So, Yoima Kama, on the first day, Amalahu, Ashmedai asks his jailers, Amaila Kaboila Limalka, Ligabe, why isn't the king summoning me to him? Keep in mind, at this point, Ashmedai doesn't know why he's been captured in the first place anyway. Only later on is Shlomo going to tell him, we need you to tell us where the Shomer is. At this point, he figures, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that Shlomo just wants to show off that he controls everything, including the Shadim. So, New, you already brought me over here, why aren't you taking me to see the king? So they told him, Ansiye Mishtiye, because the king drank too much, and now he's suffering from a hangover. He replied by Shoka Leventa. He took a brick, Oisavachavata, and put it on top of another brick. Also, Omrulay the Shleimus, they came and told Shleimer that Ashmedai had done that. Omrulahu, he tells them, I understand what he's hinting at with that. Hochi, Omrulahu, he's telling you, Hodr Ashkiyua, give him more to drink. A person has a hangover, you drink a little bit extra, you drink a little more, and that will help, take off the worst of the effects of it. Lamacha Omalahu Vamaila Kaboili Malka. The next day, Ashmedai also asks them, why aren't you bringing me to the king? Why isn't the king asking for me? Omrulay, this time they told him, Ansi Mechla, he ate too much. In response, Ashmedai takes the brick from on top of the other one and puts them on the ground, so the two bricks are one next to the other. Also, Omrulay Lashloima, they told Shloima what Ashmedai had done. Omrulahu, he realizes the message in it. Hochi Omrulahu, he's telling you, Negodu Mine Mechla, take away the food from him. When a person has overeaten, the best thing for him is to not eat for a while, and that way he won't have an upset stomach. Marshall mentions in this connection a pasuk from Yeshaya that talks about people saying, let's continue eating and drinking and we'll have a great time of it. And he connects those pasukim over there with this over here that was saying that when a person has drunk too much, then the remedy is to drink a little more. Whereas when it comes to overeating, the remedy is to stop eating. Finally, on the third day, they brought Ashmedai to Shlomo. Shokokanya, Ashmedai takes a stick, Umoshach Arbo Gamidi, he measures out 4 amas on the ground, and he throws down the stick in front of Shloima. Omalai, he says, Mechdi, let's consider. Ki Maisahu Gavra, when that person, meaning you, die, all you have in this world is 4 amas, the space of your caver. After all, a person ought to realize that eventually he dies and there's only so much, no matter how much wealth and power and control and everything you have in this world, eventually it's all going to die with you anyway. Hashta kavashta l'kula alma. So look at this now. You, Shloima, have conquered the entire known world. V'leisavat ad kavashta nami v'didi. And now you're not satisfied until you conquer me as well. What's the deal over here? What are you doing? Omalei, so Shloima answers him, it's not actually that I need anything from you personally, but in a I want to build the Beis HaMikdash, and so I need the Shamir, and I'm told that you know where it is. Omalei, so Ashmedai answers, I can tell you where it is, but I don't have it. It wasn't given over to me. It was given over to the Malach of the Sea. Why Dafka the Malach of the Sea? Marsha says maybe this creature lives in water, and therefore the Sar Shoyam is the one in control of it. The Maharal may have mentioned the point symbolically that since the Shomer we're saying is used here, the Gemara is going to go on to say that it's used by a certain bird to turn mountainous areas into fertile land. So therefore, you have kind of two opposites over here. You have the Shomer, therefore, has a power to turn otherwise uninhabitable areas into habitable places where you can plant and then whatever. And here, the Sar Shoyam is the opposite. The Yam represents the place where you can't live. Originally, the whole world was covered with the water, and then Hashem made the dry land. So, symbolically, the Sar Shoyam has the Shomer, and in turn, he gives it to a creature which is going to be able to use it to make the world a habitable place. So he says, the only one that the Sar Shoyam gives the Shomer to is to the wild chicken. So a particular kind of bird, the Mehemin Le'ashivuase, where you can trust him with his promise that he's not going to use it for improper purposes. Because after all, given that the Shamir can break through anything, it could also be used for destructive purposes. But instead, this Tanuga Labana uses it for constructive purposes. So what is it? My Umay Ovidbe, what does he do with it? Mamkila Lachuri de Lesbohu Yishuv. This Tanuga Habara brings the Shamir to mountains where there's no, where nobody lives, and there's no plants even. There's nothing grows over there. Rocky mountains where nothing useful grows. Umanachlu Hashini de Tura. The bird takes the Shamir and puts it on the peak of the mountain, or Pokap Torah, and causes the mountain to split open. So now you have land where the mountain was. Rashi describes, it doesn't necessarily mean that the mountain breaks in two, but the point is it makes now you have a channel, you have like a groove in the top of the mountain where now you have, instead of just the rocky soil over there, now you have soil that was underneath, that was exposed, which is now useful for planting. Now the bird comes and takes seeds of that will eventually grow into various kinds of trees. Over Shadihal, somebody plants, he throws them and plants them over there. They have a yishuv, and eventually you have an area which is useful for people to grow. Now it can be cultivated. People can cultivate those trees and use them for something useful. Behind the different tagamin in Nagor Torah, thus we find among the non-kosher birds in Parshas Shmini and in Parshas Re'e, it mentions a bird called Duchifas, which is translated in Targum Onklo, says Nagor Torah, which means the mountain carver. Rashi in Parshas Shmini defines it, gives a French translation, which translates in English as a bird called a hoopoe, H-O-O-P-O-P-O-E. It's a bird. It has a crest. It has a funny looking crest on its head, which is why Rashi points out that it's called Duchifas Meloshen Hoidei Kofus. It's glory. It's comb on top of its head. Looks like it's folded over and tied. So you look at a picture of this kind of bird. It has a very fancy crest on its head. It also has a very sharp pointed beak that it uses to dig in the ground for worms or whatever. And here the Gemara is saying it also uses the Shamir to break open mountains. So now Shlomo knows where we're going to find the Shomer. Bodku kinet tanagol abor de islay boni. So now they looked for the nest of this tanagol abor that has babies. Apparently the idea is there's not just one tanagol abor. Apparently what it is the Shomer can be passed around from one tanagol abor to another one, and each one can use it each in its own area of the world. So they look around for a nest of such a bird that has babies in it. And then the Shlomo sent somebody with a piece of clear glass to cover the nest with. So now the bird comes back from getting worms or whatever it is to feed its babies. Boil a male, he wants to get into the nest. And he can't get in because the glass is blocking him from his children. So he comes and brings the shomer and puts it on the glass in order to break through it. Roma Bekola, at this point, the shliach that Shlomo had sent to do the job yelled at the bird, at the parent bird, Shadye, and so it dropped the shomer. Shakle, and now the shliach is able to take the shomer. Good, now we have it. Also, Honak Nafshi Ashvuasa, now the result was this Tanagol Abor went and strangled itself for violating its Shvuah, because here it had promised the Sal Shoyam that it's never going to allow the Shomer to get out of its possession, because people may use it to destroy the world. So now, as far as the Tanagol Abor is concerned, now we have a weapon of mass destruction in people's hands, and who knows what they can do with it, and I violated my Shvuah, and therefore he figures like he can't go on living. So now, in short, now Shlomo has the Shomer, and now he's able to use it to build the Bis Mikdash.
What?
Yeah. Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola. Tesnissen. The Rebbe was talking about in Tufshin and Aleph that in our generation and in our times, as mentioned many times, we've already completed all the inyonim that we have to. All that's left is just the one thing. We need Hashem's tznua. We need one movement of Hashem to take the Jewish people out of Golos and bring us to Eretz HaKodesh. And therefore, we're begging and yelling and pleading again and again, and even more strongly than before, Ad Masai. Continuing on halachas of tchumen and other related topics, So we talked about yesterday, there's a concept that objects also have a tchum, the basic idea being whoever owned it at the beginning, whoever's possession it was at the beginning of Shabbos, then it follows his tchum. So now, what about a goy doesn't have a tchum on Shabbos or Yom Tov? So now, what about if he brings you peiros? So now, let's say, so ordinarily he brings you peiros on Shabbos, you have the concern that he may have picked them on Shabbos. That's a whole other issue. But even, let's say, you know that he didn't pick them today. Let's say, he brings you a package of fruit, for example. It obviously wasn't picked today, but there's the concern of tchumim. So then it really depends. If he brings them for himself or for another guy, then you would be allowed to even eat it. You just can't move it outside of Flamus unless you have, if it's inside the house or the city has an Eruv, and then you can carry it in that, because that whole area would be considered Flamus. But if he brought it specifically for you, a Yid, then it's the usual rule. When a Goy does a Malacha for you, it's Osir until after Shabbos or Yom Tov is over, namely the amount of time that it would take to bring them from wherever it was brought from. The Alter Rebbe brings that Yesh Omim, that he would actually have to wait until Sunday, Bechdeshi also, and Yesh Lochush, Ledivrayim, but you can be Mako when you need it for Orchim or whatever. You would be able to carry it still within the Fuamas, because even then, we wouldn't say that it's Mukta, just that you can't eat it. If it's a Sufik, then also it's also Tomatsoi Shabbos until Bechdeshi also, unless you have more of a reason to say that it was brought from within the Tum. The Alter Rebbe gives an example. Let's say the goy is from this city and he has the payrus available with him. A more obvious example nowadays would be, you live in New York City, for example, where the likelihood is it was within the tchum, because the entire New York City and probably a couple hundred miles around it is all within the tchum.